My guest today is Cynthia Paleo, a Bram Stoker Award-winning and International Latino Book Award-winning author and poet. Paleo writes fairy tales that blend genre and explore concepts of grief, mourning, and cycles of violence. She is the author of Lateria, Santa Muerte, The Missing, Poems of My Night, Into the Forest and All the Way Through, Children of Chicago, Crime Scene, The Shoemaker's Magician, as well as dozens of standalone short stories and poems. I'm Tommy Henry, and this is the Chicago History Podcast. Cynthia Paleo, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
It is a joy to have you. So tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what school you went to, and whether you believe that Chicago truly is the greatest city in the world.
It's without a doubt. Chicago is the greatest city in the world, without a doubt. I was born in Puerto Rico, and my parents came to the mainland in like the 50s and 60s. First they went to New York. They didn't vibe with New York. They went back to the island. Then they kind of did some back and forth for a bit. And then they finally settled. They lived in Logan Square for a while in the 70s. And then they finally settled in the Hermosa neighborhood in the 80s. And they just loved the neighborhood. It was very mixed. I grew up with German, Polish, Irish. It was a very mixed neighborhood. I went to inner city schools, so I didn't go to like the fancy schools like Northside Prep. Those are and I don't even think Northside Prep was around when I went to high school, but I went to William Berry Elementary and I went to Kelvin Park High School, which is an inner city, just a neighborhood school. It was down the block, and our direct competitors were places like Steinmetz and Clementi, and I was in the junior ROTC program, and that was something I was very involved in, that as well as writing within the high school, writing and publishing. And I went and got my undergrad at Columbia College in print journalism, which I don't even think you can major in print journalism anymore. And I wrote for community newspapers that are no longer around, but I used to write for like Time Out Chicago and extra community newspaper. And then I continued my education a lot. So I went to Columbia was my undergrad in print journalism. I went to Roosevelt University down the block for my master's of science. And then I was like, well, I'm going to go down the block again. And then I went to the School of the Art Institute for my MFA. And I went even further down and I'm at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology finishing my PhD.
Was your family concerned that you were going to be a lifelong student?
They are concerned. They're
still concerned?
Yeah, I finished all my coursework, but now I'm verging on the forever all but the dissertation, because I've been all but the dissertation for 5 years, but I've been so busy writing that I haven't been able to get back to my dissertation. One day I'll get to my dissertation, but right now the writing's taking a priority.
I think there are people who just enjoy the going to school, the process of school. There's nothing wrong with that.
I was the first person in my family to step foot in a college classroom. And so I think my parents were just surprised. They were like, well, we thought, my parents grew up in the 40s in rural Puerto Rico. And so they were like, we thought college was just one time. I'm like, no, I'm just going to keep going. And so they've accepted it.
And to be fair, you've gone to college enough for you, your parents, and most of your family members at this point, it sounds like.
I certainly have, yeah.
Sure, so, sure.
You're fine.
Well, let's jump back a little bit to when you were a kid. Were you a writer as a kid? Did you doodle? Like, when did this writing bug really kick in for you?
It probably didn't kick in until like sixth grade, but I was always really fascinated with like horror movies. And so my father was really into journalism and news reporting shows and Ted Koppel. And so as a kid in the 80s, you essentially watch whatever your parents were watching. We just had like the big floor TV. And so I used to watch a lot of news programs with my father. Every single local Chicago area news, I mean, I felt like I knew all the news reporters. And then I started really just becoming fascinated with horror. And my dad thought it was the coolest thing. It terrified my mother, but my dad and I would watch Tales from the Dark Side, Alfred Hitchcock Presents. So the writing started in about sixth grade when I adapted, like I rewrote like a horror story that I had seen in an anthology in Tales from the Dark Side. And then from there, I just started writing more specifically journalism. That's what I did a lot in high school, writing for journalism, writing news articles. And the fiction didn't come until later in my late 20s.
And did you have teachers in grade school who saw some of your horror writings and thought, we need to get this kid in to see some professionals? Or was it just stuff that you wrote at home?
My mother actually called the priest to come
Oh,
have a
oh
visit.
gosh. Oh,
Yeah, so we had
gosh.
the priest come and visit with me and ask me why I was fascinated with horror. She was concerned, and I just remember this meeting because we're in the living room and my father's like cracking up because he thinks it was like the funniest thing in the world. My mother was Catholic, my father was not, but he just thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And my mother had to ask my father, can you please leave so we can have this conversation with her? Because they thought there was something. I mean, in the 80s, there was a lot of stigma. I mean, Satanic Panic had just kind of started cooling
Absolutely.
off. People were terrified. And so my mother essentially was like, this is not, she's very superstitious. But that's part of my horror writing background was this fascination with like her fear and her superstitions. And considering she grew up in a rural community, I mean, growing up in rural Puerto Rico in the 1940s, she remembers the very first time she ever saw an airplane and she didn't know what it was. She was terrified of it. And so I think that's so fascinating because in this day and age, we have all the answers in our hand. But back then, I couldn't imagine that feeling that she had. So my teachers in high school, they knew my writing kind of delved a little bit more into dark fiction or just dark interests. And I think their concern at that time in the 90s was the dissolution of all the pulp presses. And they were like, we don't think this is going to be able to sustain you financially. So maybe focus on journalism, PR, marketing, and then by night do writing, which is essentially what I do now. So by day I'm a marketer, by night I'm a writer.
Well, and you've written a lot. Matter of fact, each year the Horror Writers Association presents the Bram Stoker Awards for Superior Achievement, named in honor, of course, of Dracula author Bram Stoker. Not only are you a winner of the Bram Stoker Award, you are the first Puerto Rican-born winner. Where were you when you found out that you won, and how did that change your trajectory as a writer?
I was one of the guests of honors at the Stoker Con. So I was already there and I was at the awards ceremony. And it was my fifth time being nominated. And it was my father and I were very, very close. I think that's kind of like a through line in all of my entire life. We were very close. And he died weeks prior. And so I was in the grip of like grieving. And so when they announced my name, it was just this very difficult, bittersweet moment that I worked so hard. And especially there at the end, he did hospice at home and I was on deadline. And so I would go visit him at home and he would kick me out and say, you're on deadline. You shouldn't be here. And so it was very hard that moment because it's like I'm trying to process that I work so hard, but he's not here to see me. And whoa, I'm also the first Latina and first Puerto Rican born person to win a Bram Stoker Award. This is going to be different. And so it's still terrifying because I think I was able to operate for such a long time with my head down and just writing. I was very, once upon a time, very active on social media. And I think social media, I've kind of backed off a little bit because it's become a lot and it's become scary. So I think I'm trying to navigate this new world where there's more eyes on me and I'm under a magnifying glass.
It sounds like your father was very supportive of you, and I'm sure he would have been very proud to see you win. So that's, you know, it's got to be some amount of solace in his passing and the timing of all of that. So it sounds like you were fortunate to have the upbringing that you did and the support that you did from your family.
I mean, I love Chicago because of my dad, and he, so like, I didn't go to in the 80s, we didn't go to preschool. You were like at home until you were like 5 or 6. And my dad was a stay-at-home dad and my mom worked. So my dad and I were home all day long getting in trouble. And so he'd be like, let's go downtown. Don't tell your mom. And so 4 years old, he would just take me on the L and we would go downtown. And then he would be like, hey, I'm going to stop and hang out with, see some buddies in Humboldt Park. And then he would like pop into a bar in Humboldt Park during the day. And him and all the drunks would like give me quarters to go play like the Pac-Man machine. I shouldn't be saying this, but. And so here I am like during the day, my dad's hanging out with his buddies. I'm in Humboldt Park playing Pac. I mean, it was just like this wonderland with him. Like he was so like, he was the fun parent. We would like, we'll be in Humboldt Park. He would take me to Jackson Park, everywhere. He loved the city. Like it was always like, I'm going to take you to Garrett's now and we're going to go get a hot dog and I'm going to take you out of school early and we're going to go, I don't know, catch a ball game or something. It was like insane. Like, but it was so much fun.
When was it that your mom found out about all of your adventures with your dad and how did that go over?
She's the strict parent. And so she, like, even like it was touching because even as he was dying, she was like, I know this is going to hurt you more than me because you two were like in sync. I think she was jealous because she was like, you know, you two are like, have your little inside jokes. And my dad and I were always like at a family party in the corner cracking up or something. We were very, very close. It was, you know, there are people that you meet in life and they can be anywhere from like a best friend, a cousin, a close friend. And for me, it was like a parent that we were just so close and we kind of, he was very supportive. And like, I think even though he only had a 6th grade education, I feel like my father is probably the smartest person I've ever met because he taught me so much about resolve and grit and how to just kind of make it through in life.
Grit is one of those things that you cannot learn in school. And it sounds like you were fortunate to have him in your life. So let's talk about your latest work, Forgotten Sisters, which is set in Chicago. It's an adaptation of Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid, and it will be released by Thomas and Mercer this month. Tell me more about the book, and if you had to pitch it to a potential reader, how would you do that?
Forgotten Sisters is a psychological gothic thriller. Yes, it's a genre blending novel about two sisters who are agoraphobic that live in a historic manor along the Ravenswood, along the river in the Ravenswood neighborhood. And bit by bit, they start becoming more and more immersed and the growing case of young college-aged men that are being found drowned in the Chicago River. And two area detectives are able to connect their home to the series of drownings. And so they all must work together to find the killer.
Was it difficult finding the right balance between those two stories?
No, because I love bending genre and blending genre. And so I'm always looking for the different types of elements that I can kind of incorporate. And with this specific case that many of us are aware of the series of men, college age men being found, you know, in Chicago waterways, I was like, wouldn't it just be so interesting to kind of weave in the Little Mermaid with, you know, these, and I write fairy tales. When I say I do fairy tale adaptations, first it's because given my parents only had a 6th grade education, those were the stories they remembered from their youth. And so they recounted a lot of those to me. So most of my novels deal with like a fairy tale adaptation of sorts, but I'm happy I was able to blend those elements the way I was aiming to.
Well, I was going to mention fairy tales later because, you know, You're not talking about the fairy tales, kind of the light stuff that most people grow up with. A lot of your fairy tales deal with the true stories and the very dark elements. And you brought up Blunderbore from Jack and the Giant Killer, which, you know, is one of those things that I think a lot of people don't know the name of the creatures. But I think the thing that really amazed me, I mean, first of all, you know, all cards on the table. I think that's the phrase. I get sent a lot of proposals like, hey, do you want to talk to this author? And blah, blah, blah. They've got a book about Chicago. And a lot of times it will be a brief mention of Chicago, or it'll have stuff about Chicago that's so vague that I have trouble like connecting it to anything that I'll do. So I pass on a lot of stuff. But when I read about your book and your background, I thought, oh, this is going to be great. I don't read a lot of fiction because I spent so much time reading nonfiction for research, but I blasted through your book because it was so, yeah, it was so Chicago filled. I started writing down, well, first of all, you included one of the most detailed descriptions of what happens to a submerged body in the Chicago River that I've ever read. And so I wanted to know how that came about. Did you medical journals, police reports, your own super active imagination? Because it was a little unsettling.
Yeah, so it was the medical terminology because we hear it, right? We're like body found drowned, and we don't really think about what water, long-term submersion in a body of water does to a person. And I started thinking of the terror of a family identifying a loved one that had been submerged for days and weeks and months. It's like, and so a lot of this was medical journals, police reports, photographs, the crime scene photographs that I was able to get access to that were, it's very unsettling as you would read in the book what the this how a human, you were organic material and we're made of water. So what does that do? We turn into putty, essentially. And so it's very, not only have you lost somebody, but what's happened to them that is so sad to the way they look.
I played in a band with a guy about 10 years ago who has his last name tattooed on his arm, on his forearm. It takes up his entire forearm. And one day I said, hey man, what's the deal with that? And he said, oh, if they ever find my body in the Chicago River, they'll be able to tell it's me. And I thought, oh, that's funny. But after reading your work, I was like, huh, would that work? Maybe that would work. So in addition to the gross story about submerged bodies, I started writing down. So I'm reading your story on a tablet, and then I had a notepad, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. She mentioned Sears house kits. Sears used to sell house kits, and you know, this is for listeners, where it arrived on basically a couple of pallets, and you could build your own house from Sears. You mentioned the Irving Park Bridge over the river, which I walk past almost daily because most of your story takes place about a half a mile from where I live currently. Garfield Park Lagoon, Friends of the Chicago River, William Herons, Gacy, Speck, H.H. Holmes, City Winery, tour groups of kayakers, which I loved, Western Electric, Hawthorne Works. I had to stop at one point because there were a couple of pages where you had so many great Chicago references that I thought, I'm never going to finish the book if I keep stopping to write this down. So kudos to you for including all of these great references. How important was it to writing this book to have all that stuff?
Chicago is a character in my novels, and I think that's one thing that I will kind of refuse to let go of. I think that I remember growing up and everything was like New York, LA, New York, LA, and I was just kind of like, so? Like, do you, I don't think people realize how absolutely amazing the city of Chicago is in our history, and not only of our foundation, but the people that built the city. I mean, I don't want to, it's not a silly term. It's like, and I think there's so much about Chicago in the media as of recent to try to kind of diminish the city. But, you know, L. Frank Baum wrote parts of Wizard of Oz and Humble Park. I can walk to Walt Disney's birthplace from my home, the skyscraper. It's like, it's such a magical city. It's an absolutely wonderful city. And I'm partial to the people right here. I prefer Midwesterners. I've traveled. I've been lucky to be able to have traveled. I think I've done like been to over like 20 countries. I can't even count how many cities, but I always want to come back home because this is home and I feel so comfortable here. And just our history with all of these things, I felt like it was important to highlight Chicago as a character.
I agree completely. Matter of fact, I made some other notes. One of the things that you included was a quote from one of my, one of my favorite authors, Nelson Algren. You included something from his 1951 work, Chicago City on the Make, which is, Chicago is an October sort of city, even in spring, which I loved. And to go on to finish it for people who aren't familiar with it, yet once you've come to be part of this particular patch, you'll never love another. Like loving a woman with a broken nose, you may well find lovelier lovelies, but never a lovely so real. And I thought, it's such a great quote that really fits the city so well. But I think you also had, I think it was one of the police officers says, it's a city that prides itself so much on its history, but very often silently tears it down. Which, as a guy who reads a lot about history of the city and buildings and architecture, and to see what the city used to look like and what it has gradually become before a lot of the preservation organizations got involved. You definitely have a nice kind of ear for how this city works.
Yeah, there's I guess an aside, I mean, to add to that, there is nothing more horrific for me when I see a gorgeous historic home torn down, and in its place, it's a box that is built up within days, and it's horrific to see that.
But I'm sure you're okay with a house from the 1800s being torn down so that somebody can have a side yard. You're okay with
Oh
that, right?
gosh,
Yeah.
yeah, when I
Oh.
that,
Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
the wrong people have the wrong type of money.
It truly, I vacillate between it's history that you're tearing down, and well, it's your money. You can do what you want with it. But it's like, hey, if you have that money and you want to do that, go somewhere else, please. Go somewhere else. Speaking of Nelson Algren, are you a fan of Algren? And what other authors, Chicago authors, do you like?
Well, just thinking about like in terms of, well, of course, Nelson Algren is my OG, and so I have his books over here on my shelf. But I think in terms of, I guess, want to give some shout out to like, well, local authors that are working and writing today. Like, Julia Fine is based in Logan Square. Daniel Krause is like up north. Gillian Flynn is also a local as well, and so it's like it's nice to have. Nick Medina is another, he's a local area Chicago author. Michael Allen Rose is also really local. So, of course, there's our authors who we associate with Chicago, but I like being able to credit the ones that are working today.
I like that as well. Speaking of Forgotten Sisters, one of the characters in the book hosts a podcast, so I could relate to that quite well.
Oh, Adam Seltzer. Adam Seltzer is another one.
Sure, sure.
You
I thought of you a few weeks back, speaking of men being found drowned in the Chicago River, because yet another young man was found after a night of being out. He was like 23 years old, so I thought, what a very topical element to have in your book.
Yes. Some people, I mean, there's been, of course, a lot of theories, but once, okay, I get an accident, two, maybe three, okay, I get it. Accidents happen. People drink, they lean over the railing. But this many times, what are we at? Like 19, 20 over the course of a year or two? It's strange. It's strange.
And they're often alone when it happens. So if it was, three guys being knuckleheads, one guy gets pushed into the water, there's two guys to at least help them out or get someone's attention or, but these guys are almost always alone when that happens. And so having that all in the book made it even more spooky and obviously timely.
Yeah, and I think regardless of who you are and where you're at, what you look like, I think you should be cautious of your surroundings.
Ever vigilant, ever vigilant. I tell my kids, I have three sons. I always say, keep your head on a swivel. Even if you're in what you think is a very safe neighborhood, you've got to keep your head on a swivel.
And don't be scared to be rude, because
yeah.
Your safety is more important than being nice to a stranger. So if you feel uncomfortable with something, then you have every right to cross the street or go into a store or, you know, do what you need to do to be safe.
It's great advice. Speaking of advice, it's a hacky question, but I'm a hacky guy. What advice would you give to aspiring authors?
Don't quit. Don't quit. And I know it's very frustrating because there's a lot of different levels in this industry. I've been writing and publishing since 1999, journalism. I really started in fiction about 2008. I didn't get my traditional book deal until, you know, a year or two. So publishing is a game of attrition. You just have to keep writing and submitting and querying. And there's different types of career. Your writing career could look very different. There's a multitude of independent presses. Self-publishing is definitely a viable option. If you want to go the traditional route that I've gone through, be prepared that a lot of it is not about you. It's about them. It's a business, and they're looking for marketable material.
Forgotten Sisters is coming out. You must be super excited. What is next? Or are you going to take a little break and try to catch your breath?
I just submitted my next novel a couple of weeks ago, and I should be getting my next set of edits today. And that one, of course, deals with the city of Chicago, and it deals with many of our urban legends. And if you're familiar with the city of Chicago, you know we have many, many urban legends, places like Bachelor's Grove and the hauntings at Rose Hill Cemetery. And so it deals with a lot of that.
Well, I'm hopeful when that is released, we get a chance to talk again, because quite frankly, Cynthia Paleo, it has been a delight talking with you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This was fun. I love all things Chicago history, obviously.
Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks to my guest, author Cynthia Paleo, for joining me today to talk about her life in Chicago and her new book, Forgotten Sisters. Check out her website, Cina Paleo, for her upcoming book signings and other events in Chicago, Austin, Texas, Minneapolis, New York, Kirkland, Washington, and more. If you want to help out the podcast, please like, rate, and review the podcast, and tell a friend. It helps us get the word out to fans of Chicago history. Also, give us a follow on those social media sites. The show is pretty easy to find, and I do post much of the content from these episodes there. The original art for the Chicago History Podcast used on the social media pages was created by John K. Schneider. Outstanding, Johnny! If you've got projects that need a creative touch, send him an email at angeleyesartjks@gmail.com. I will be back soon with more stories from Chicago's history. Until then, get out and explore when possible. Support local authors and local bookstores. Learn more about whatever city you live in, and stay safe.